night. We did it. We're here. Opening day, baby. Whew. I think we could all agree the Jays sneaky put us through hell last year, even though they made the postseason for whatever the hell that was worth. Like I mentioned yesterday, it was the Simpsons monkey paw season. All you want is meaningful fall baseball. Well, all you're going to get is meaningful fall baseball. You're going to get meaningful fall baseball, but yeah, you're not going to enjoy it. You're not going to enjoy meaningful fall baseball. The goalpost has moved. That's the feeling of today that I have, okay? Because I think that we would all agree, nobody wants to be pessimistic on opening day, right? Nobody wants to feel like angry or annoyed or down on a group that hasn't had a chance to do anything yet. But this season for the Toronto Blue Jays feels very, very different than the years that we've had past in this group's recent history, which is we've come into every single year with unbridled optimism. Basically, since Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Bo Bichette became regulars, we looked at this as, boy, these guys are going to be nasty. Holy crap, this might be the best generation of Blue Jays baseball that we're ever going to get. I'll never forget that when they were signing George Springer, Ennis and I were doing shows talking about how there was never a time where the organization had as much talent, as big of a budget, and as deep a farm system, and as much just hope that we've seen since we were fans, at least, of this baseball team as, you know, adults. I can't speak to how it really felt when I was a kid and this team was winning World Series. And that's gone. That's not there anymore. And it would be disingenuous for me to say that it is, because I don't think that's really how anybody's feeling. I think that there's probably a lot of people that are excited to get the baseball season started, which of course I am. I can't wait to watch baseball. I love baseball. I think I mentioned this like just in passing with Armin all the time, where I'll just be like, man, I just love baseball. I'll talk about it with my friends where I just bring it up and I'll go, I can't wait for baseball to start. I can't wait to get down to the ballpark, watch the Blue Jays play, ride the up and downs of the season. But the feeling this year is that meaningful September baseball, meaningful fall baseball, that ain't it with this team anymore. It's different. There's got to be more. And to me, it's a few things now. You got to be entertaining. This product has to feel fun. It can't feel like a drag the way that it did last year, because even when they were winning games, it was tearing people apart. People just didn't, like, it wasn't fun. It was a slog just about every single game that this team ended up winning. Slog, that was the way that it felt. Even Mark Shapiro admitted at his year-end media conference what a difficult year it was for them. They ended in one of the most embarrassing fashions that I can think of when it comes to any Toronto sports team. Like, from a playoff standpoint, that's the way you went out? That felt like you could put that up against, I don't know, Raptors getting swept by the Wizards, where it was, oh man, they're good. And Paul Pierce went, nah, that team ain't it. And then they didn't even have a moment in the series. You can put that up with, we want Florida last year, and then the Leafs go in and play Florida and they just get embarrassed and they get bounced in five games. At least they were like the better team. That one was a really, really tough exit. So yeah, you've got to be entertaining. You've got to hit on some players that had lower expectations this year, right? Some people have to exceed what you're anticipating from them this year. They need to cash runners in scoring position, and they need to provide hope. They need to provide hope to the fan base that this year can actually be different, that this year is the year that they're going to actually win a playoff game. Because we've all kind of had it, and we've all kind of seen it, and we've seen the growing pains, and yes, Vladdy's young, and yes, Bo is still young, and blah, 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 blah. But this is it. This season has a very, very, very different feel. So be entertaining, cash runners, give people hope. That's all we want. I think when everybody closes their eyes, they're not trying to dream on the Blue Jays being annoying or some version of what they were last year. You close your eyes and you think about things all falling the right way, right? You think about Vladdy hitting 40 home runs again. You think about Bo Bichette trying to put together an MVP caliber season. You think about the rotation staying healthy again. You think about the bullpen still being one of the better ones in all of baseball. You're hoping that some of the elder statesmen on this team don't regress, but they actually find the fountain of youth and that they actually rake. But yeah, we got to see it. And they've got this incredibly difficult start to the season. And I think it's just going to be fascinating over the next couple of weeks what we end up getting here. Because if the Blue Jays can just put together a good stretch of play, starting today, starting at 4 o'clock today, if they can start doing this, then we'll put everything, that will help put everything behind them. That's what's going to turn the page. That's what's going to make people feel different. They get off to a slow start and it feels like that slog, and boy, it's going to be pretty tough for this fan base if it just looks like all they did was flip from one season to the next. Anyways, it is opening day. It is hope day. It is time to turn the page, or at least try to. And it is a day that I do get very sentimental about the sport because I love it. It's my favorite time of the year, and it's one of my favorite sports and one of my favorite guests, Dan Shulman, voice of the Blue Jays. How are we, man?
I'm doing well, JD. How are you? I can see you're emotional. You're in mid-season form on Hope Day already.
It is. Okay, it is Hope Day, right? But yes, this Hope Day is very different than previous Hope Days that we've had, right? There's like a different tone to this one tonight. Like, I don't know, the first series of the year, I don't know if it feels this way for you because you're just a vet, you've done it for a while, and you're a pro, I'm an emotional person. But it always feels like to me that the first series of the year is like the most intense series until you get into September.
Right. Every game, the next game is always the most important game. The next series is always the most important. So you could probably play a drinking game with me saying, you know, the next stretch is, you know, that kind of, and you'll hear it today. But I think there's some validity to it. I mean, first of all, it was one more, you know, 2021, they missed the playoffs by a game. 2022, they had the 8-1 lead in game two. Now you've got another instance, 2023, we all know what happened last year, doesn't need to be litigated again. So you've added that, fairly or unfairly, rightly or wrongly, truth or fiction, the Ohtani thing is in the minds of some people. And just as an aside, like, I get why people, you know, jump on the front office sometimes. I don't get why you jump on them for trying to sign Shohei Ohtani. Like, what did they do wrong there? And whether they were used or not, they tried. Mm-hmm. And they got him to Dunedin. Obviously, he wasn't on the plane. Like, the whole thing took on an air of surrealism, really. But I don't know why you jump on them for trying to get Ohtani. But it hurts some fans. So you've got another playoff defeat. You've got that. I think the fan base, I'm not telling you anything you don't know, and you're right, looks at this team. I think the expectations externally, for sure, are lower than they've been in the past few years. I mean, even on day one or day two, whatever it was, of spring training, when Bo Bichette said, and I'm paraphrasing because I can't remember exactly what he said, but, you know, we're not viewed the same way as we were. I could see and I didn't feel this way in the past couple of years, but I could see a wide range of results for this team. I mean, I do think there's a chance that a lot goes right for them, that some or all of the guys who didn't put up their typical numbers last year do better this year. I think Varsho is going to do better. Mm-hmm. I think Kirk is going to do better. They need Vladdy and Springer to do better. You know, and it's a lot of ifs, but if you get some positive things from the returning guys, I could see this team winning 90 plus games. I could also see this team winning 78 games. I really don't know. I could see them being a playoff team or non-playoff team. And if you're good enough to get in, you're good enough to do some damage. And you're also capable of getting swept, as the Rays did last year, as the Orioles did. You know, the best division in baseball history did not win a single playoff game last year. They went 0-7. So forget about what happens once you get in. You just got to get in. And I think they're good enough to. But there are a lot of other good teams in the American League, and they're gonna need to stay relatively healthy, and they're not up to a great start in that regard. Although, thankfully, Kevin Gausman's fine, or close to being himself. But, getting back to what you were saying about tough stretch and all that, it's true. It's not ideal to play 10 games at Tampa, Houston, and New York to start the season, and you're doing it without Danny Jansen, Jordan Romano, Eric Swanson. So I do think it's important to not, you know, come home 2-8, 3-7. Like, just tread water. Tread water in this opening stretch. Get home. Get to a weaker part of your schedule eventually. Get some guys healthy. And then it is a long, long, long season, right?
Oh, it's the longest season. This is, yes. You know, it's funny because so I do this show, Leafs Talk, after every Leafs game. And you catch yourself sometimes thinking about, oh, my God, remember this narrative? And it feels right. Like 100 years ago. And you go, that was too much. And that's the hockey season with 82 games. So, yeah, every single baseball season, I always tell myself, no sport makes you look dumber. Well, me dumber, because I have opinions on the sport, right? I come out here, I'm like, here's my thought on this. And then 2 weeks later, that's completely irrelevant or absolutely wrong. And it's, it's horrifying to look back on. But I really buy the weight. Just from the fan base standpoint, that they can't go through this opening stretch here and come back home for that Mariners opening day or season opener, home opener, and be, you know, five games below 500, where they just get smoked and obliterated in this series. They got to find a way. Keep your head above water. People are going to be patient. Win these games. Look good in some of these games. Be a scrappy group that actually starts to hit. And I think people are just going to jump right on board because that's just the nature of this fan base is they love a winner. And people think of this as a derogatory term. I don't. I think that we are a big time bandwagon sports city in general in a good way. Like when the teams are winning, we come out in full force and support these teams. And so, man, I just hope this starts well. Do you think there's anything more important, though, than Vladdy starting the season well? Like if he's raking, that's the number one point of people are going to be optimistic about the team. And if he's struggling, people are going to go, boy, it's looking like that 78-win season.
Right. I'll give you a tied for first because and you're exactly right. Like, and you know, I get asked a lot during spring training, whatever. You just bump into people wherever I am. And you know, what do you think is a big key for them or whatever? And the answer is always Vladdy, right? Yeah. The number one answer is always Vladdy because we've seen the peak. And even if it's not the peak, if it's, you know, 80-85% of the peak, that's a huge, huge boost for this lineup. But I would put, if that's 1A, then, or 1-1, if that's 1, I would put 1A as the bullpen right now because Swanson and Romano are out. And so people understand, they will start the year on the IL. For pitchers, it is a 15-day IL. You can backdate them a maximum of 3 days, which means they will be out a minimum of 12 days, which is 11 games. So they are not going to be there for at least 11 games. And Ross Atkins said yesterday, barring any setbacks, I'm paraphrasing, we are confident that they will be back within a month. So that's more than 11 games. Yeah. So, you know, it's very realistic. These guys will miss 20, 25 games of the season. They've got to, and as you know, it's one thing when your team doesn't hit, and Blue Jay fans saw that last year, and that's a certain kind of frustrating. Mm-hmm. It's a different kind of frustrating when your bullpen blows leads, and I think it was 2021 when that happened, right? The year they got Simber and Richards in the middle of the year because the bullpen was so bad at the beginning of the season. So there are two things that can happen to mitigate this. One is Jimmy Garcia and Chad Green and Nate Pearson and Tim Mesa and Genesis Cabrera do the job in the late innings or whoever's in there in the late innings. The other thing is for the offense to do enough where you don't have 3-2 games all the time. Mm-hmm. And didn't it feel like even in the games the Blue Jays won, every game was 3-2 last year, right? Yeah. So, but this is going and other teams have injuries too. The Yankees have some. The Rays have a lot. But this is going to be a challenging stretch. And I'll even throw the first home series against Seattle in there. Seattle's good, and their starting pitching is great. So I think that's a 3-game series, if I'm not mistaken. So let's call it the first 13 games of the season that are going to be, you know, keep your head above water kind of games for the Blue Jays. But, you know, back to Vladdy, yes. 264, 26, and 94 is really good for most major leaguers. But he's capable of more. You know, yesterday I thought it was interesting, and we forget sometimes that he's been around a long time, but he's still relatively young. He's just turned 25. Mm-hmm. And one of the comments that he made yesterday in a session with the media, and I was there at the drop when he said it, he said, I'm in a better place mentally right now because I know it's 9, not just me. I think that's an interesting comment. And maybe him saying without saying, I felt pressure last year. We as a team weren't hitting, and I knew everybody, you know, looks at me, and maybe I tried to do a little bit too much. Hopefully he doesn't do that. As an aside, I love the Justin Turner acquisition for like 12 different reasons. I think it's great, and I think that he's going to be a big part of this team. I don't care. Here's another over. You were talking about things, you know, looking back on things you said and how silly. not you personally, but I don't care what order the 1, 2, 3, 4, what order they hit in. And I don't care 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, what order the rotation is, because in 3 weeks, it's all going to change, you know, and it happens every year. But whether Vladdy's hitting 2 or 3, whether Bo's 2, 3, or 4, whether Springer's 1 or 4, whatever, it'll sort itself out. But I do think I kind of like Bo behind Vladdy, because I think Bo is a run, like he's a drive runs in guy as opposed to a set the table guy, if you know what I mean. He's not a get on base guy. He's a do damage guy, right? He doesn't walk very much. He's out there to hit the ball in the gap. And I think Bo's in a really good place. And I think Justin Turner, with the quality and competitiveness of his at-bats, and then hopefully Varsho behind him, who had a great spring and has made some changes. And I know that Dalton Varsho's in a better place in his second year in the team, not trying to prove to people that he was worth the trade and all that. So I'm hoping there is some, you know, positive regression, or if that's the proper term, there's some improvement from the guys offensively. But it does all start with Vladdy. And I think there were some encouraging signs in the spring, but it starts for real with Zach Eflin tonight.
Yeah. One, I think it's actually kind of funny, though, that he's like, now I feel like it's 9, not me. And it's like, Vladdy, the team's like the exact same. It's like the exact, those guys are going, what? Sorry, say that again, Vladdy? Who did you say? It's like Justin Turner here, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. He's like, now it's so different. Looking around the clubhouse and seeing those dudes. Now I'm with you on a lot of that stuff. But I do want to focus in a little bit on Varsho, because I don't want to misquote you, but I saw somewhere that you had spoken to someone about you thinking that, like, he does look really good. And I don't want to call your journalistic integrity into question here, but I've always been a little dubious with you because he's a cheesehead as well. So I'm like, I think he wants him to be better because he's just like a Packers fan. He wants this guy on the team forever so that they can talk about Jordan Love. And yeah.
Right.
But what is it about him? Because I think that just from that, you're right, it is positive regression. From a positive regression standpoint, he's probably, outside of Vladdy, the number one guy offensively that you go, okay, well, we've probably seen the floor. But do you think that what you're seeing, or what is it that you're seeing that gives you more optimism about him? Is it just the fact that he's not carrying that millstone around his neck, or is it something actually that you're observing from the spring games?
I think that's a big part of it. I've always felt that guys, when they get traded for the first time, that it can be a struggle for them. And now I'll give you some especially ifs. Especially if they're being heavily counted on a contending team, which he was. Mm-hmm. He was traded for Gurriel and Moreno. And I don't know how much he's on social media, but you don't have to be on much to know how the fan base felt about that deal. And then people forget this whole thing. Brandon Belt was supposed to hit cleanup at the beginning of the year, but was coming off knee surgery. Didn't even play till about 3 weeks into camp. Didn't make contact for about another 3 weeks. Like, eventually he got it going and had a good year, but March and into April was not good for Belt. So they dropped Belt and they moved Varsho up. Also, Varsho was brought in to, and nobody said this explicitly, but quote unquote, to balance the lineup, because they had a ton of right-handed batters. So balance the lineup, hit cleanup, protect Vladdy, and help us get to the World Series. That's a lot, you know, and I'm a big believer, and maybe not so much in sports like hockey and basketball, but certainly in baseball, where there's more time to think, that, you know, sometimes you can be your worst enemy. And I know he's a tinkerer, and I know he's a perfectionist and could be hard on himself and all that stuff. So, yes, I do believe that mentally, emotionally, psychologically, he's in a way better place. In terms of what I saw at the plate this spring, and I talked to him about it a couple of times between secret handshakes that Packer fans have.
Mm-hmm. He's
trying to do different things. And one of the things he's trying to do, and it's kind of been the team-wide philosophy from Don Mattingly down, is know what you can hit and know what you can't. Don't swing at what you can't hit until you get two strikes. And it's not trying to draw walks. It's trying to get into a favorable count to do damage. And Don Mattingly said to me, we're trying to get them to focus on an area the size of a volleyball, not a beach ball. So we tell each of them, here are the numbers. This is what you hit on this kind of pitch in this kind of area. So Varsho's not Bo. Bo can hit pitches that, you know, few people would even consider swinging at, and he can do damage. Varsho's got holes. He's got a hole in, he's got a hole up, and he's got like a soft changeup hole down and away. And he knows it. Mm-hmm. So with him, maybe more than anybody, like, I think Bo can just hit with the Bo philosophy and he'll be fine.
Yeah.
But I think this, if they can stick to this plan, I think this helps Varsho more than just about anybody else. So I went up to Varsho the day after I talked to Mattingly, and that day in the game, Varsho had taken a 1-0 fastball about 4 inches above the belt. And then on the next pitch, the 2-0 pitch, which was about thigh high, he lined one sharply to right for a base hit. So I went up to him and I said, I asked our producer to get this video. We're going to show it during the game today, the 1-0 take and the 2-0 swing. I said, does that kind of encapsulate what you're trying to do this year? And he goes, absolutely. He said, last year I would have swung at that pitch. And maybe he swings through it or maybe he pops it up. He said, this year I'm trying to take what gives me trouble and swing at what I can handle. And I said, Don Mattingly told me the volleyball beach ball thing. Has he said that to you guys? He goes, every day. So it's in their heads to narrow their focus, narrow their sight. So sorry for the long answer, but I think it helps Varsho more than others because, quite frankly, he has holes. But if he can recognize what they are and be disciplined enough to lay off and get in a decent count, I think he is likely to have a good year. And actually, if you look back at his last 2 months last year.
Yeah, it was better.
And then, yeah, if you look back at 2 months and triple him, if he had done that for 6 months, we wouldn't be having this conversation right now. He actually was quite a bit better in August and September.
Yeah. You know, it's funny so much with this team. And yeah, I remember, you remember after the 2021 season and it closed and I talked to you about how the Jays just played with joy. There was a joy to them and it was infectious. And I felt like it worked for the fan base too. Right. I believe in that kind of stuff, like the energy around a team and the energy of a fan base. And I don't think it's everything. Like, I don't think that just because the fans go to the game and they're, you know, ornery that the team's going to lose. But I think that there is a compounding effect, like the stuff that you're talking about here, and that you're tying it in with the way Vladdy was feeling and the way Varsho was feeling. And my hope is, and this is why, again, I just think that the beginning is so important. My hope is that these guys can get off to a good start so that it does alleviate some of the pressure on them and that they can just have fun playing baseball. Because I really think if this team is having fun, they're going to start to see success. That if they aren't, it's going to be the tightening up and all of a sudden Varsho is going to be remembering who he's traded for again and Vladdy's going to be thinking about his demons. You know what I mean? Like, That to me is such a critical component of this baseball team, is like the synergy between the fan base and the team and the joy.
And it's a valid point. And I don't know if people feel the same in the other 29 markets as well. I mean, you go back to 2021 and Teoscar Hernandez and Lourdes Gurriel were still on the team. And obviously that was a unique level of fun that year. Plus they were hitting like the 27 Yankees most of the season. Right? That's fun too. Winning is fun. But so with those two guys not on the team, obviously the personality of the team changed last year. Yeah. And after so Gurriel and Teoscar traded after 22, but 21 and even 22, super fun, obviously. And whether the front office felt they needed to get a little more serious or not, I have no idea if that was any part.
It seems like that was it.
It could be. It could not be. Yeah. I don't want to speculate because I don't know. Sure. Obviously – there were some different personalities, brought in some older guys, some guys who had been around, just who have different personalities, whatever. But it's interesting because, you know, usually we have the conversation about what comes first, confidence or results. But with this team, you're right. It's like the conversation is fun or does results bring fun or does fun bring results? And this is professional sports. This isn't a, 9-year-old T-ball kids, right? And like, it's funny that we're talking about this with Major League Baseball, but every year is different. And this year will have more David Schneider and it will have Ernie Clement and it will have Justin Turner, right? It will have some different personalities, but I'm with you that it is very important for them to get off. I'm not saying a great start.
Sure.
Like I said already, it's a keep your head above
survive.
Water start.
Survive.
I think this year. Yeah. Yes. Because of the injuries and the road trip and the schedule and all that stuff. But and I think a lot of it too is a guy, and I think we've mentioned him once in passing here. Uh-huh. George Springer's really important. Really, really important. Fun George is super fun. Like, he's capital F fun, you know. So, and he didn't have his best year last year, and he knows that. And I talked to him down in Bradenton a couple of days ago at the last spring training game. And he's in a good place. He says he checked the boxes he wanted to check. He feels good physically. He's in a good headspace heading into the season. You know, it's March, right? There's always optimism, but I think he is motivated for, this goes without saying, to have a better year than he had last year. You know, we can talk about so many different things, but I go back a lot to Vladdy, Kirk, Springer, and Varsho. If they need those guys, not, you know, to do a little bit better than they did last year, and hopefully they will. The other thing about this team, we talk about them, you know, trying to stay afloat, is I think we're going to look up in a month or two, and whether it's Yariel Rodriguez or whether it's Alek Manoah, hopefully Swanson or Romano coming back, at some point Ricky Tiedemann is going to pitch for this team, barring injury, he's going to pitch for this team this year. Is, I think they're not in a great spot now because of the injuries, but I think the depth is there that, you know, by the time they get to June, July, when other teams are scrambling, hopefully their depth and it is really showing itself. And I think they'll be fine on the pitching side. So if they do need help at the deadline, I think hopefully they'll 100% be focusing on offense if they need help offensively. But like I said before, every season is so long, and a dozen things are going to happen that none of us could ever, ever, ever predict. That's part of the fun of the season. But I do hope it's fun for the fans. You know, more than anybody else, the fans deserve a fun season. And they want to fall in love with this team. And, you know, you use words like ornery. And so I think fans are afraid to kind of open their hearts a little bit for fear of how are they going to break, like 2021, it's the shot of Vladdy sitting in the dugout on the last day watching the Red Sox win on the scoreboard, right? Yeah. Watching the Red Sox win. And then we all know what happened in the playoffs the last 2 years. It's almost like you're afraid to get hurt again. That's how I look at the fans, but it's opening day. It's hope day. You know, what's more regal than the trough on opening day, right? So we got that going for us. But I hope that they won four in a row on opening day, if anybody cares about that. But I hope they get off to a good start. And there's enough talent here to compete for a playoff spot. I think we would both agree on that. And I think there is urgency to win. And whether you want to use the term the window is closing or not, doesn't matter, whatever. But I think from the front office's point of view, if they're in it in June, July, they'll try to bolster the team if need be.
Yeah, I'm with you in George Springer being, like, it's weird to call him an X factor, but I think that he is the number one X factor. Like, you touched on Kirk and Varsho, but I think that those two guys are, I don't want to say this with certainty because obviously anything can happen, but I would say if I was betting on anyone's numbers to go up from last year offensively, my picks would be Vladdy, Kirk, and Varsho, simply because I just think that all of them are too good from what we saw last year. Springer's numbers were bad, but also like the underlying numbers were tough. And he's going to be 35 years old in season this year. And so I just think there's a big question of if he can find it and he can be, you know, George Springer, not the guy that was with the Astros, right? But the guy that from a season ago, like a season before, the guy that has the crazy win-loss record when he was in and versus out of the lineup. If you get that guy, I think it's like that's going to be one of the major talking points of the entire season. They need they sneaky need that guy. And I just I hope he can find it. And with the fan base, I'm with you. It's everyone's guarded. That's it. Is everyone's guarded, because especially after the Shohei thing, like I can speak personally, I was calling people, Dan, I was in tears. I was crying. Because I was saying this was going to change, like, what it meant to be a Canadian sports fan. I was like, this is going to change my life in a massive way. And then he wasn't on the plane. And so I think that after those playoff losses and then to also get kicked in the teeth that way, it's going to take a little while. We're basically the people, this is a bad analogy, but it's like, we all got cheated on badly. And now we're trying to enter a new relationship and it's like, I'm not going to move in right away. You know, like I'm going to keep my place.
And I get it.
I'm going to keep my apartment.
The Blue Jays aren't the only team in town that has made fans feel like that way.
You know. It's actually kind of nice of them to just fit in. You know, they're like, hey, we're just going to do our part. That's some cities like Pittsburgh. They're like, we do the black and yellow thing. Like, that's our common theme. Toronto's is like, no, we're going to shatter you. Like, we're going to shatter you across the board in tough, tough ways. I know you got to run, but before you do, I got to do one quick thing, which is, I don't get to talk about college basketball with anybody, and you have to do this with me for like 2 seconds. I just have to say, Okay, so I just need to tell someone who knows what I'm talking about. I have my five favorite players so far from the tournament. It's DJ Burns, Tyler Kolek from Marquette, Jamal Shedd from Houston. It was just an awesome finish watching him in overtime. I love that Elliot Cadeau kid from UNC. Can't shoot a lick, but just this cool little playmaker, undersized guy. And then Baylor Shireman from Creighton. Who is your favorite guy to watch? Like, if you're doing a Dan Shulman, and you could pick a couple of guys because I was greedy with the five. But right now, moving forward of who's remaining, who's the guy or who's the team or the teams that you're just like, no, 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 you got to make a little time for these guys because they're just really, really fun.
DJ Burns is the easy answer. And if you've seen him, you know that. So I did the ACC tournament where they won five games in 5 days. And, you know, generally a big guy backing somebody down five, six, seven dribbles, it's not pretty basketball. It's like 1950s basketball. But there's something about DJ Burns that I find absolutely irresistible. Yeah. He's so much fun to watch. And he's an enormous human being, as you know. But he's got soft hands and sweet feet, and he's very talented, and I love his emotion, his expression, all that. And if there's a Cinderella, they're it. You know, they had to win five games in 5 days in the ACC tournament to get into this. They wouldn't even get into the final wasn't going to be enough, and now they've pulled off two wins and getting to the Sweet 16. You know, and it's, I mean, the slipper is not going to fit together. I mean, they're not going to win the national championship. They're going to run out of time. And it could be in their next game. But I think he is super fun. Jamal Shedd is great. If you like heart and soul and grit and guts and all that, I mean, he's that guy. I root for Clemson just because I cover them a lot.
Okay.
And they have year after year after year, kind of like the Blue Jays have had. Like, they're that, oh, God, that was painful. Oh, God, that, you know, they've had a bunch of that. And I've gotten to know the coaches, you know, very, very well over the years, obviously, too. And Rick Barnes at Tennessee, I think, is like as awesome a guy as there is in the world. So I kind of have a little, you know, I root for them a little bit. But if people who don't watch much basketball at all and have never heard of any guy in the tournament want to be entertained, we'll turn on the NC State game and watch DJ Burns.
I thought Clemson was going to blow it for sure. I couldn't believe it when I was watching it. I was like, holy crap, this is a nightmare. And I will say the guy who missed the cut for me on that top five is Shiflin. The
Shefflin.
Ian Shefflin. Just like kind of a mound round of a rebound kind of white guy. It's like he's got like this pudgy boy face, and then he's just ripping rebounds constantly in a heart and soul
like
energy.
Rosy cheeks. Like he looks like the guy who comes and entertains at like a kid's birthday party or something.
He looks like comedic relief. Honestly, he does.
But he's great. He came in as like a three-star prospect. Is this guy good enough to play in the ACC? And now he had a great year. He's another good choice too. You notice him. But it's been a great tournament. I haven't had a chance to watch a ton of it, but it's been a great tournament, and I'm hoping to watch a little after the Jays game tonight.
I will also be watching a little bit of it with the Jays after. I'll be watching just a touch. All right, I'll have it on. Let's just say, Dan Shulman, have a great call today. Thank you so much for making time for the show. I always appreciate it. You know that.
You got it, JD. Thanks.
Take care, man. Dan Shulman, voice of the Blue Jays, guy who likes college basketball. God, yes, what a day! I'm back. Actually, you know. I watched Daryl Sittler give a speech last night at the Conn Smythe dinner, and it made me just immediately go, oh, you know what? The Leafs matter. The Leafs matter the most. And I forgot how incredibly powerful it is, this fan base. I'm back in on Toronto sports. Hearing that, knowing that there's March Madness tonight, knowing there's Blue Jays and Leafs. It's like, I'm back in it. Like, I'm happy. It's going into positive mode now. Joe Siddle next.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Opening day, hope day, the return of your Toronto Blue Jays, the baseball season. One of my favorite days of the year. Let's keep the great guest rolling. It's Joe Siddle, Blue Jays analyst. What's up, man? How are you?
Good morning, sunshine. It's opening day. It's a great day.
Oh, it's the best. It really is. And I'm just in it now. Like I said, I'm here now. I had a little bit of, oh no, please don't be bad. Now I'm just here. Okay. Like I'm ready. I'm ready to just be completely optimistic and blindly optimistic. And just go full heart forward and prepare to love again. I got to ask you this though, Joe, They did flip Vladdy and Bo in the lineup, and I just had Shulman on. He's like, yeah, this probably won't mean anything in a couple of weeks, right? Or maybe it doesn't mean anything in a couple of weeks. But did it say anything to you about either of the guys, like making a move like this to start the season?
Oh, man, you can look at this so many different ways.
I know.
In one sense, I like Vladdy second because it separates Springer and Bo. We know they're both kind of early swingers, aggressive hitters. Vladdy might work the count a little bit more, just a little bit of a different approach. So you break that up, which I like. The flip side is if you're tied or you're losing late down a run and you're facing a tough pitcher like a closer, I might prefer Bo's approach than Vladdy's. So maybe I want Bo second instead of Vladdy. Now it's one spot in the order. How often that comes up. But so I can go either way, but either way, you bottom line is these guys need to be themselves, right? I think you can analyze a lineup until the cows come home. But if Bo does his thing, he's Bo. And if Vladdy does what we hope he can do, that'll be whether it's in the 2-hole or 3-hole, it won't matter. I don't think that's going to have a tremendous impact. It could have a lot to do with comfort levels. I'm sure Schneider's talked to both of them. I'm sure they've analyzed what would work better. But man, that's a lot of minutia for me. I think either way. If it were me, I have Bo hitting third and Vladdy hitting second.
Okay, yeah, because I just for me it was hard not to look at that and go, all right, but what are you guys saying about this? You know, like what does this mean? And your mind does wander to a lot of different places where you're like, well, if they think Vladdy's power numbers are going to return to the degree that they were going to, why wouldn't you want him behind Bo? Or if they are not as optimistic about that happening and they're looking at him just to be trying to get on base more, and maybe they want Bo as the RBI guy. Maybe they're trying to take some of the pressure off of Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And that's where I'm going with this one next is, okay, so Dan talked about how Vladdy feels a little bit better this year. He's talking about how it's not just him. It's the nine guys around, or it's the other nine guys as well. He feels more supported this season. There was, I thought, a bit of an interesting note when he had a sit down with Hazel where he talked about wanting the home run jacket back. And I know we all poke fun at that, but to me, that reeked of a guy who is just looking to have fun again, right? Like really trying to get back and find the joy that he plays with. And I'm curious if the amount that we are expecting from him this year, when it comes to the positive regression for the offense that should return, the hope that the power numbers are going to get better, the fact that, not hoping that he doesn't hit a home run at the Rogers Center until what, June, July again? Mm-hmm. Do you think that there's more pressure on Vladimir Guerrero Jr. this year?
Well, I think there's pressure on Vladdy because of who he is and what he's done in the past, right? We just know that his ceiling is way higher than everybody else in the lineup. That it's just, we all know what he could be because we saw it. And you can talk about minor league parks and all that nonsense. I just think the swing's a little different. And I mean, you have to be, if you're his age, you have to be feeling that, right? I wasn't thrilled to hear this about the jacket because I think that's silly, whatever, guys celebrate, do whatever you want. But the fact of the matter for me is as a player on a team, you don't do something that everybody's not on board with.
Yeah.
And maybe there are people in the room that ended that last year. Maybe they're still here. Maybe they're not. I'm not in there. I don't really care about the drama. But for him to say that, it was, I don't want to use the word selfish, but I didn't like the way it came out. Like, why are we talking about a home run jacket here? You know how you have fun, Vladdy? You have fun with a 900 OPS. That's how you have fun. You know, like that's the bottom line. If he's hitting, I don't think it's going to matter if he's pretending to put a jacket on or if he's putting a jacket on or if he's in a grocery cart or if he's high-fiving and fist bumping. It doesn't matter. When you hit, it's fun, and regardless of how you want to celebrate. So I just think that's reaching out to other silly areas.
So one of the things that I really remember about last year is when you came on with me, I think it was the day after the home, I can't remember exactly where it was, but you talked about Chapman, and you're like, yeah, I don't think that the swing adjustments are going to be sustainable. And at first, he was like tearing the cover off the baseball and was like, Joe, maybe, he's like, what are you talking about, Joe? Shut up about this, Joe. And then you were proven to be correct because it completely ended up tanking. And I'm curious what you think about Vladdy and the approach. Like, what is it that, you've got a great eye for these things. What is the thing that is going to be the real positive indicator from you from an actual like baseball standpoint, not the stuff we can't quantify that we're all trying to look at from the outside, which is the happiness and the joy and whatever, but the process that you think will best lead to results for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. starts with what this year?
Well, for the average viewer that just likes to watch baseball and what are you looking for, Vladdy, he needs to punish some fastballs, especially the fastballs with a little velocity behind them. Because last year, with that move, we saw the problem that I talked about several times, probably with you too. Remember the big move with the hands? They were still coming down as this move was going forward, and the timing was just a mess. He wasn't right, and he was rushing. So when your timing is not right, you rush. And when you rush, that's a bad thing, right? That's everything breaks down. So I thought I'd come into spring training and maybe see not drastically different, but more like what we saw in the past. And the real change we've seen is that he's kind of keeping the hands a little higher. I'm like, when I first saw him, I was like, okay, like that should help his timing. But then I'm looking going, it's still not really the move that he used to make, a little bit more dynamic. Whereas now the hands are staying up, but they're kind of like stagnant. They're kind of, there's still like what I would call slack or looseness in the swing as opposed to getting good stretch so you can fire. So while the hands are staying up, he's conquered that timing issue. But I think, you know, just the other day I was over at the player development facility and he was in the cage and then went out in the field to take BP, went back in the cage. I'm kind of watching him and looked like he was still fighting that timing. Not just his own timing, but the timing, like with the pitcher, like when the pitcher starts, when do I start my little gather check step that he makes, right? And then, so the hands stayed up. I get that, but I think when he's best is when he is more, that's a more dynamic move. And when I mean dynamic, I mean when that, you know how his stride foot comes back, he has that little check step. I like when he tips that flipping barrel almost toward the pitcher and really engages his core and his back hips. So now he's loaded. That allows you to control that forward move a little bit. So instead of drifting out because there's no gather there, you're strong in your core and your back hip. And now that stride, but it's like everybody makes the move forward, but it's more controlled. It almost goes out independently, that stride. But so that's what allows you to stay behind the baseball. When I talk about tipping the barrel, I wish I could show you right here, but tipping it, think of tipping the barrel toward the pitcher and then whipping it back. And now it allows you to stay behind the baseball. That gives you a little more time against velocity. And those are the moves. I go back to remember that home run he hit off of Garrett Cole a couple of years ago. It was flipping 98 inside, I think. Well, that's the move I'm talking about being more dynamic and getting more of a stretch and a coil, because that's what allows you to fire. And that's what's going to increase your bat speed. It also gives you adjustability in your swing. I can go on and on. All good things. And end of what I'm saying, JD, is it's not what I'm seeing right now. So I hope once again I'm wrong.
No, you weren't wrong. That's the whole point. The point of that wasn't to say you were wrong. It was the opposite. It was that.
I know. I hope I am wrong. I hope so we'll see. And I think, you know, let's not use one game. Let's not use the first 4 days to gauge it. As I always say, give everybody the month of April. Give everybody 100 ABs because things might happen in the first week or two where guys make an adjustment, boom, they click, and sure. And I know Chapman had the great April, and then it all fell off. But let's just give it a little time. When the season starts, we can be quick to evaluate, and that's the last thing you want to do. Guys are trying to get settled in. But my point is, going into spring training, the first thing I said I'm doing when I get to Florida, I'm watching Vladdy, and I'm watching him closely because I want to see if their changes are there. Were there changes? Yes. And he had a good spring, right? The numbers are all like, that's what I mean. It's hard to say. It doesn't work.
But everybody had a good spring. I don't know what those are. Yeah, I don't know what that means. Like,
you know, those spring training stats are right out the window for me.
Yeah.
I mean, they matter if you're a fringe guy like an Ernie Clement or, you know, my dude trying to make a team, that matters. But those guys, the wind's blowing and you're facing different pitchers and they're not really sequencing pitches and executing game plans. The list goes on and on, but yeah, so we'll see. Like, as I said, I hope I'm wrong, and I hope he's got 1,000 OPS at the end of April, and he's mashing fastballs. But that hitting fastball now, you know, Zach Eflin's not a big power guy. He's more of a sinker, curveball, cutter guy today, so maybe he'll hang one of those cutters in the middle of the plate. For me, that's the worst pitch a pitcher can throw to Vladdy or somebody that's struggling with a fastball, because you're just helping them get to the pitch. But he doesn't, you know, Eflin doesn't have 96, so it shouldn't be a problem, but they will see it. They'll see it before long, and we'll see how the hitters react, including Vladdy.
Okay, so then let's do this one, because I know that you watch Vladdy, obviously, with a much closer eye, but was there someone who made adjustments at the plate this spring, like came into spring training, and you went, I like this one. Like, this is not the Chapman version. This is the one Joe saw and went, I think this is going to work for player X.
Kirk. Kirk's okay. My answer. And now that's not going out on a big limb because we know that he's been a good hitter and he can be a good hitter. But last year what I saw was a guy that was never ready when he got to spring training. He never really got ready. He just was, and I'm saying that in all due respect, this is a good hitter that he wasn't himself. And when you're not yourself as it, and you can talk whether it was whether he didn't come to spring training in shape or just he never found his swing. But when you're fighting it, and you don't think once again, talk about the fastball, another guy that should mash fastballs, that's when he's good, and he didn't. You start cheating a little bit, you start rushing a little bit, and there are those bad words when you have to start your swing early, and you're pulling off the baseball, and you're coming in and out of the zone with your bat, all those bad things that hitters and hitting coaches talk about. Because you're just not right with your load, with your body, what you're doing in your swing mechanics. So you come out of your swing mechanics. And we know when he's right, we saw it right a couple of years ago, this guy's got a great knowledge of the strike zone. He'll take his walks. He'll hit line drives all over the field. And that's what I saw more of this spring. The approach where he is laying off those pitches. He is being a little bit more disciplined. But I thought the swing was much more in sync. He gets a good – He's got a short, compact swing. There's not a lot going on there, and that's a good thing. But he gets a good stretch, and when he gets the bat in the zone, he gets that deep barrel turn I talk about because it gets your bat in the zone early. Think of like Bo, and it stays through the zone longer. So all those things, it gives you adjustability in your swing. So you can get to the heater, but you can also adjust to the secondary pitches, the spin. And when he's at his best, like any hitter, that's what they're doing. But we've seen Alejandro do that. He's not going to hit 25, 30 home runs, but he can be such a valuable hitter and a good hitter, take his walks and do all those things. And I think when he's at his best, of course, when he's not at his best, we saw what happened, right? You come out of your swing and you're rolling ground balls over to the left side of the infield, and he cannot be hitting balls on the ground, right? That's just a double play waiting to happen. So I thought he was really good. I thought he looked different. I mean that by his swing and his swing mechanics. And look, to me, more like the guy we saw a couple of years ago, and hopefully we're seeing maybe more of that 800 OPS guy than the 700 OPS guy, right?
Yeah, God, they could use it. They could really, really use it. And to me, when you're looking around the roster, it's like he's got to be one of the guys. Like he just
Spencer Jano out, right? Spencer
yeah, out that's what I mean. And I you hope that the workload doesn't end up being too much. That he is still able to rake and take the positives from spring into the regular season. But Kirk. Kirk feels critically important to me, especially when it comes to, the offense, not just the defense this year. Last one. I know you got to run. 11 games, no Romano and Swanson at least. What does the back of the bullpen look like to you to start things off?
Fine.
Okay.
Can I use the word fine?
It was a very tepid fine, is it? Fine.
Yeah, the only reason I say that is because when it's one thing to lose relievers, but you're two back end guys, your two best, that's a killer to start the season. So you've got guys that have done it, and that's why this Blue Jays bullpen is built the way it is. You have Jimmy's done it, Chad Green's done it. Haven't done it for a little while, and we're going to find out in a hurry if the Blue Jays have a lead today in the eighth or ninth or tomorrow or the next, whatever the case may be. I've always said, and JD, I've said this before, that the ninth inning is different. Those last three outs are different. I don't care what anybody says. I don't care about numbers, stats, whatever. Those three outs are different, and the way they react will tell us a lot. But that's what happens when you get injury. Your depth is tested, but in the bullpen, what happens is guys get thrust forward a little bit. So your sixth, seventh, eighth inning guys are eighth, ninth inning guys. And now your middle guys are move up also. So it's tough, man. I think it's, I don't want to say it's understated because it's important. You just asked me about it, but it's something I'll be watching closely because that's a brutal way to start the season. We know, the offense can help because, if you're up 5-2 or 5-1, it's a lot better than those close games they're playing, but it just happens. It's inevitable. It's going to happen. These guys are going to be called upon, and you just don't replace a Swanson and Romano. They're just not replaceable with anybody you have.
No.
So that's why I use the word fine.
Yeah. Well, and not even to mention that, Jordan Hicks was a part of the back end of that bullpen last year too, and it's a different type of departure. You don't have him, but it's like you could kind of say that they're missing the three guys. I believe in Chad Green. I just think he's the real deal. I think he's a big game pitcher. I think that he can do the job. But it's gonna be tough if this team starts off slow offensively, like they finished last year. But then also, if they do have leads, they can't protect them because of the back end of the bullpen. I hope it's fine. Joe, can't wait to watch you on the broadcast. Thanks again for making time today, brother.
All right, man. We'll be in touch.
Absolutely.
Enjoy.
Take care. Bye. Joe Siddall, analyst for the Blue Jays. Now that he's gone, I can say what I say every year. Now that both guys are off the line. And I mean this. This is not sucking up. This isn't anything. This is genuinely how I feel even when I get to talk to those guys. We are so lucky as Blue Jays fans that that is the broadcast team. Like, that is outrageous. That Joe, a guy who actually breaks down the game in a digestible way, who's like smart, easy to listen to, loves the game, has like that passion and that knowledge, that he is the person that you get to listen to break down some of the X's and O's. He's the guy that breaks down the mechanics of the game. And then Shulman is like, listen, I don't want to say he's the best because that seems like it's a shot at other people, but it's like, he is the best. He's the best at it. And baseball, you get one voice and you're not picking Dan? Like, I don't know. Seems like you would. It's outrageous. It's just outrageous that this is the way that it is here. Yeah, very fortunate to get to speak to both those guys today, and I really do appreciate their time. But that is like, people always ask me, hey, you know, what guys do you get really excited to speak to? And every year when it's Blue Jays time, I'm like, oh my God, it's like a refresher. It's like, holy crap, that's who I get to listen to all year. That's so, so, so good. Anyways, quick break. Let's come back. Let's talk to JP Ricciardi. Harmon keeps playing me in with like romantic R&B beats today. Anyway, it's opening day, all right? I need something with a little juice. Hopefully that is provided now by our next guest, JP Ricciardi, former general manager of the Blue Jays, executive for the Mets, the A's, the Giants, and now host of The Brushback with JP. You're a media guy now. You've become one of us. Welcome. Welcome.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah. How do you like it so far? Like, I know you're just starting the new pod. But yeah, you excited for this? Like, it's a new venture. Doing it what are you going to do, every week?
Yeah, we're going to do every week. Yeah. It's fun. It's talking about baseball. You know, it's not a lot of heavy lifting and, good guests talking about something you like.
Mm-hmm.
And really the nice thing from hopefully our end is there's a lot of behind the scenes stuff that the average fan doesn't get to know about that, you can bring 20 something years of being in a front office, bring it to light a little bit. So we're excited about it.
Yeah. No, congrats, man. I think a lot of us are excited for it. It's always great being able to get that kind of inside look and those behind the scenes stories. And I'm hoping that, we steal a little bit of that today from you, we get a little bit of that. We get a little bit of that taste, but I want to start with this. Like, so I was watching the pod and, you're delivering your take. You seem a little bit more optimistic about this Blue Jays team than a lot of the rest of us. And, like, I think that's a good thing. Like, you're a far more educated eye than the average fan. I think, like, the way I could describe this is, I'm a Seattle Seahawks fan. Do you follow football? Like, are you a football fan?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so you remember how we lost a certain Super Bowl?
Yeah, you mean the one you lost to us, the Patriots?
Oh, the worst. Well, okay, I regret this line of questioning. But the Seahawks completely fell apart after a loss like that. And I look at this Blue Jays team, and a point of curiosity I have is, like, how do you bounce back from a loss like the one you had in the postseason last year? Because it was ugly. You ended up going with a very strange strategy, and it backfired on you. You didn't score any runs. The fan base was really pissed off, and everybody kind of gets run back. There's not a real major shift or change from the management standpoint, from the front office standpoint, from the roster standpoint. Is it a real thing around a baseball team that there's that carryover? Like, does stuff like that linger? Am I overstating the potential of this or the feeling of that? Like, what is that to you?
Yeah, I think you're overstating it a little bit. Sometimes, first of all, winning is really hard. It's very, very hard. And I understand there were some questionable decisions made, and that is definitely open for criticism. I think the fans are justified in asking that question. When you sit in a front office or you are in there as a manager or player, whatever it is, you know, you have to answer the tough questions. And that was definitely a question that should have been asked. But as far as what the makeup of that team is, that team has a lot of talent. I don't know who else they could have brought in that really would have made a big, big difference in pushing the needle. You've got a really good player at shortstop in Bichette. Got a really good player in Guerrero at first base. You've got contributing players all around. Springer's is still a good player. Kiermaier was a good sign. He's going to shore up their defense. Mm-hmm. You know, Varsho, I think, will have a better year. You know, outside of bringing in Ohtani, what other guy would you think that they could have brought in? JT Turner was a nice pickup. You strengthen your bench that way. I think that, you know, the critical mass of the Blue Jays lineup is going to be productive. And you either believe in the players you have or you don't. And obviously the front office does. And I have to side with them. I like this team. I think they're going to be a little better than people expect just because of the fact that their rotation can post. So I like their chances. I think they've got a better roster than some of the other teams in that division.
So, you know,
who's got a bigger question than the Yankees? I mean, if Garrett Cole doesn't post for the Yankees, they're a totally different team. If the Orioles have any more setbacks in their rotation, they're a totally different team. So all the teams in that division outside of the Red Sox, who I think will finish in last in that division, every one of those teams has question marks. The Blue Jays' question marks, is Vlad Guerrero going to respond? I think the answer is yes. He's only 25 years old with a lot of talent. You know, so this – I would like to have the Blue Jays problems as opposed to the Yankee problems right now.
Oh, okay. So, you know, I also like, speaking of Vladdy, and you talk about his age, you compared him to Jason Tatum on the brushback. And I thought that was a good analogy, because it's like, yeah, this is a guy who feels like he's been in, or is older than he is, because he's been in the league a long time. And, you know, now we've built up a bunch of different experiences for him. My thing with Vladdy, though, is Jason Tatum is a outside MVP candidate, right? Like, he's not one, he's not two, he's probably not even three, but he'll get down ballot votes. Do you think that Vladdy can recapture that? Do you think that that's still the ceiling for the player? Is someone at the end of the year that we're not going to be going, okay, he's the MVP, like maybe we thought a couple of years ago, but that he is kind of like in the Jason Tatum mold of, oh yeah, no, but he was down ballot. He was, you know, sixth or fifth when it came to MVP voting.
Well, let me ask you this. If Vladdy goes out and he hits 270 and he hits 40 home runs and drives in 120 runs, is that a pretty good year?
It's a much better year than what he had last year.
That's going to put him in the MVP, his name in the MVP in some way, you know? So I think if I was in Toronto, I wouldn't be worried about MVPs. I'd be worried about his production. The MVP is whatever, that's something you don't control. But I just think you've got a very good player. It's much similar to Juan Soto. You know, Juan Soto's going to have a big year in New York, I believe, too. I think they're just too good. They're talent. If you're talking about a guy who fell apart last year and hit 220 and only hit 15 home runs, I mean, this kid still had a good year. Not the year you expect, because expectations are high in Toronto, but a lot of talent in that bat. And I guess I'm not as quick to write him off. And I understand why the fans in Toronto get a little frustrated with him, because you do expect a lot out of him, but he's still a young player, and I think he's going to have a big year.
Yeah. Okay. So if he is, you can't choose him as the X factor for the team, because it's just, he's so critically important to the group. And yeah, like you're hoping for a massive year like that, right? Like, imagine 40 home runs. God, you'd kill for that right now. But if there's one thing about this Blue Jays team that you think is going to determine their success outside of Vladdy, who is it, or what is it?
Well, I think there's two things for most teams in baseball. The number one thing, it's become so prevalent in our game, and it's actually alarming to me, is health. It's just amazing how many players are getting hurt and falling by the wayside. And once that happens, no team has the depth. Maybe the Orioles do, but that's because they're so young. And I don't see any other team that has depth. So health is a major factor for every one of these teams. The second thing is the Blue Jays have to get their starters to post just like they did last year. If they can get their starters to post and they take the ball and get 25 to 30 starts out of their core guys, I think the Blue Jays have a 1-5 that most teams in that division don't have. If the Yankees post with Cole, and that's a big if, Cole, Rendon, and Stroman, they got three, Their 4-5 is questionable, but their 1 is really questionable. The Red Sox, I don't even know who their 1-5 is outside of a few names that you don't really know about.
Yeah.
Tampa's always, you know, running the starter, the one inning starter, so they don't really have a starting group that they can run out there every day. You know, they mix and match, and Baltimore's banged up a little bit with their rotation. So the key for me with the Blue Jays is those starters being able to post. Now, there is a little bit of a red flag because they posted last year, and the chances of that group being able to post back-to-back years, it just becomes harder and harder.
Yeah.
But I don't think these questions are any deeper than anybody else's in baseball.
Yeah. So it sounds like they got to have their starting rotation, which is an advantage on paper, translate to being an advantage on the field. But the injury thing that you said there is kind of interesting. Like, you sort of allude to, like, you feel like injuries are on the rise. You have a theory on this? Like,
I actually do. That's a good question. I think, first of all these players today are training way too hard year round. It's a red flag. You know, I think if you talk to other guys in other sports, it's the same thing happening with them. Baseball players are working out year round now. It used to be you took at least the month of October off. Maybe in November you started lifting, stretching, whatever you did. December, same thing. You didn't really pick up a ball and start throwing until January. And just that's really just kind of like build your strength up. Now, these camps, they have minor league camps where guys report in January, and they're throwing bullpens, and they're airing it out. And these guys are on the mound, touching the mound and touching the ball 9 months out of the year. Your body's not built to do that. You know, ligaments and tendons only have so much shelf life. And we're maxing these guys out with velocity. We're pushing velocity. And I think what we're doing to these young players is we're not allowing their bodies to heal. And I think that's a major, major problem. And, you know, we've become a game that has all this sports science that's everybody's running to sports science, how body movements, strength training. You know, so many different things that organizations are spending a lot of money on. I don't see the injuries going down. And I think it's a byproduct that these guys are trying to work out 10, 12 months a year. It's just, it's not healthy. Your body needs rest.
See, I think that's so fascinating, though, too, because, you know, you mentioned a couple things. One is teams are making so much investment. Like, teams are paying so much money for these sports science departments and all the data that they have, all the facilities, all the trainers, whatever, their strength and conditioning departments. So you want to feel like you're getting a return on investment. So I would imagine that teams continue to push those things. Like, they hire these people, so they obviously believe in those people. If you're an athlete, right now, especially in modern times, you constantly have people that you can compare, right? Like, you can look at your opponents. Like, I watched Alek Manoah every single day this year work out because he's posting on his Instagram him training every single day to basically tell people, hey, I'm doing everything that I can to get back there. But you as a competitor got to feel like, yeah, if I'm going to have an edge or I'm going to be able to keep my head above water with my competitors, then I have to do everything possible. It's kind of a risky move for a front office or for any organization to say, we have to dial it back. Like, saying less is more is basically the most aggressive strategy that you could probably take in that department.
Well, I'll give you a funny story. When I was in New York, we had Bartolo Colon.
Yeah.
Bartolo Colon pitched about 1,000 years in the big leagues, yeah. Right? He had a body made by Tim Hortons.
and a few
all
other
Bartolo
things.
Colon, yeah, all Bartolo Colon did was post every year. Uh-huh. If he was a starter, every fifth day Bartolo Colon posted, he gave you 6 or 7 innings. If he came out of the bullpen, he could get his arm up and pitch back-to-back days. And one time, Sandy Alderson and I were talking, and it was at the winter meetings, and we were talking about players and going to all this off-season stuff and making themselves stronger and making themselves better. And, you know, Sandy's raving about how these guys look and their body movements are up and this and that. And I said, Sandy, you know what Bartolo Colon's doing? He's going to be like Punxsutawney Phil. On February 1st, he's going to come out of his house in Puerto Rico. He's going to stretch, look up, and see if he sees his shadow. And said, nah, maybe I'll start throwing in 2 more weeks. Yeah. I said, that guy, all he does is post, and all these other guys are in the gym, and all they are is hurt.
Uh-huh.
So you tell me.
Yeah. So the message of the story is be like Bartolo Colon. Everybody be like Bartolo Colon.
The message of the story is everybody needs to recuperate.
Yeah.
You don't have to be You know, the other thing is, what do I care what your bench press is? What do I care what your squats are? What do I care? There's a balance in there. You know, there has to be a balance. Just telling me what your velo is in January, big deal. You're not getting anybody out in January. I think you got to allow your body to recover. And I think so many of the younger kids are getting hurt because they're even pushing this even more than the big league players are.
You know, I think that this is actually something that's kind of across sports right now is we've had these incredible data dumps, right? And all these added resources for people and, social media trainers, again, sports sciences, nutrition, workout plans, all the body movement stuff that you're talking about, like all these things have come in and everyone just went, okay, we're going to oversaturate it. We're going to do as much as possible in every single regard. Like even look at where the NBA was at with like the load management stuff. Got so ridiculous that they were like begging guys to play 65 games, right? That this had to be a huge part of their CBA negotiations. Like, guys, we need you to play some of these games because we're so overly concerned with the data, rather than you just end up playing them. And I think that probably you're on to something here and that, you know, maybe it's not this year, maybe it's not next year, but that eventually teams start looking at this a little bit differently once we have a more conclusive data set that says, yeah, actually all the stuff you brought in here, it isn't limiting injuries. So what are we doing?
Well, baseball's it's a copycat business.
Yeah.
You know, everybody follows everybody else. And there's very few teams that sit there and say, no, we're not going to buy into that. You know, and it takes the team that says, like you look at scouting now, everybody follows a model. I don't know why, but everybody follows a model. We've just lost common sense. We've gotten away from so much common sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know. It's just we've been driven by high tech. And
yeah.
I'm not saying high tech isn't good, but I think there has to be a balance. I don't want a young kid throwing a bullpen 100 miles an hour in January when I need that kid to pitch 9 months. I need him to build up to get to that point. And we're supposed to be the adults in the room controlling that, but we're chasing, you know, we want to walk away in January and tell you what his spin rate was and what his angle was.
Yeah.
Who cares in January? Who's he getting out in January?
Well, you know who cares is people who are also trying to protect their jobs because it's easy to say, well I followed the model.
Not to interrupt you, but let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Where is it getting them? Which organization is doing all of this and is flat out dominating? You see anybody?
No, I couldn't tell you.
No one's rattling off 7 world championships in a row.
Yeah.
You know, you have an infinite time to win. There's a window. The Blue Jays are in that window right now.
Yeah.
That window's going to close. If Bichette doesn't stay with them, if Guerrero doesn't stay with them long term, that's a whole cycle they have to they turn over and they go through. So winning is cyclical. The key is to win when you get the opportunity to win. But some of these organizations today, they think like they have infinite amount of time and they can trust all this process. But you have a couple of bad years, your process is out the window.
Yeah. I just think that it's easier. It kind of reminds me of the managerial stuff, like even kind of getting back to the way the Jays season closes. You also have these models that tell you what a pitcher should be doing or when they should be coming out or what the matchup is, and you remove the decision from the person that's in the moment. And I'm not saying that it's always incorrect. Like that one in particular turned out to be really, really tough, and Jays didn't score any runs, blah, 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 blah. But I think it's easier when you're an organization and say, listen, it wasn't us that made the decision. It was the model. And so you kind of, responsibility.
Let me ask you this question now that you brought that up. If that's the way organizations are being run, then why don't the people who run the organization, why don't they put the uniform on and manage the team? That way, they're the ones who have to stand there and take the criticism.
Yeah.
It's not the manager, because the manager's not going to sit there and tell you, oh, I was told to take this guy out.
Yeah.
I think Kevin Cash wakes up every winter in a cold sweat wondering why he took Blake Snell out of the World Series as he was breathing.
Yeah.
And I think Dave Roberts does the same thing with Rich Hill. Guy was breathing. I mean, at some point, doesn't common sense take over? And that's where I think the Bruce Bochy's and the guys with experience as managers have the wherewithal to be able to say, I'm not doing that. I'm going with the flow of the game.
Yeah.
But I've always said, if you're going to dictate how a manager manages and how he makes out his lineup and how, you know, plan out how the bullpen's going to be used, then you should take off your general manager's hat or whatever you wear, and you should put a uniform on and go manage the team.
Yeah, I'm with you. You're here. I'm just with you. I think all it is you want someone else in front of you absorbing the blows. But two is that – It takes real guts. It takes real conviction to be the person that makes those decisions in the moment and puts their foot down and says, I am going to do this. And
well, it's a built-in excuse. What they say is,
yeah, that's what I mean.
We trusted our process and our process didn't work, but we had a process. Well, what good is that? If a guy gives me $1,000 to go to the track and I go to the track and I put it down on the fifth horse and I say, well, my process was good. He should have won.
Yeah.
I'm still out $1,000.
Yeah. That's actually very common.
A loss is a loss.
Yeah.
You know, a win is a win. We've just convoluted how we go about it, and we've built in all these excuses now. You know, when I was at Toronto, we didn't have a lot of money. We did not have a lot of money. You can say whatever it is. We tried to do the best we could with what we didn't have, which was resources. And we tried to be creative. And I think in a lot of ways, we did a lot of good things. We never made the playoffs, but if it was today's day and age, we would have made the playoffs two or three times. So you don't sit there and make excuses. You try to do the best you can with what you have. Mm-hmm. But these organizations, I think today, a lot of them are building up so much in the way of a process to how they get to their decisions. It's a built-in excuse. And listen, you either win or you don't win.
Yeah.
That's the reality of sports. We're paid to win.
Well, let me close on this then. If the process fails again for Ross Atkins, is this his final year to you?
You know, that's not my call. I've sat in that seat, and I know what goes on with that. I know that comes down to what ownership thinks. That's totally an ownership decision. I think there's definitely expectations for the Blue Jays, and there should be expectations. They have one of the top 10 payrolls in baseball. Mm-hmm. When you have that, you should have expectations. So, you know, whether Ross keeps his job or not, that's not for me to say. I think that's based on what the philosophy of the ownership group is. But, you know, I think the one thing about professional sports are you're paid to win, and we all know what the roadblocks are in trying to win, and it's just what ownership decides at that point. Okay. But I think the Blue Jays are going to have a good year.
Okay, let me frame it this way then. As someone who has felt that heat then, the heat of, okay, crap, maybe my job security is starting to shrink. Did that affect you on the job? Like, how does that actually manifest itself as you're trying to do the work? That feeling of external pressure, knowing that you're not in year one anymore, you're not in year two. Is it real? Like, did it impact you in a way? How does it work?
No, you can't do your job scared. If you do your job scared, you shouldn't have taken the job in the first place. Mm-hmm. Your job as the head of the organization is do what's best for the organization. And if it is trading someone, you know, I didn't want to trade Roy Halladay, but what ownership came to me and told me, you got to cut payroll again. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I made a promise to Roy that we were going to try to win based on what ownership had told us. So once that promise was removed, I thought I owed it to Roy to at least be honest and tell him, listen, Roy, they're asking us to cut back again. So what do you want to do? Because I think it's in your best interest to, you know, think of how you want to end your career. We're not going to win here with the resources they're taking away from us. So we were very honest, and that's why we went down the road of trying to trade Roy. So you got to do what's best for the organization. You still are a gatekeeper, and you still want to, you know, leave the place better than when you found it. Or, you know, once again, just try to do the best you can. And, you know, I think if you do the job scared, you shouldn't have the job.
Again, the podcast is called The Brushback with JP, former general manager of the Blue Jays, executive with the Mets, A's, and Giants. Long, long, long career. JP Ricciardi, thanks so much for making time today, man. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, all the best. Take care. Thank you.
Take care. That's good on that process, because that's where we're at now, is you got to see the process show the results. We've heard enough about the process, the process, the process, the process. And this is actually kind of a good way for me to pivot into, I wrote down the five Blue Jays that have the biggest stakes this season. And number one is actually Atkins. And you might think like, oh, JD, it should be Vladdy. It's no, because Vladdy's two, okay? You don't need to tease the list, but Vladdy's two because, yeah, he's still going to have a career after this year. You're always going to hope on Vladdy, okay? It doesn't matter. He's going to end up being in his age 32 season, and his name is going to be Vladimir Guerrero Jr., and someone's going to talk themselves into him finding the magic that he had in 2021. That's just a reality of the situation. I think, like, I'll get into the stakes for him in terms of this season, but, yeah, he's two. Because the other guy, his legacy here, I think, is going to be sealed based on this year. What happens with the Blue Jays this season, that's going to seal the way that we look upon the Atkins era. Shapiro, different story. I'm sorry. Like, I know people think that it's always just like the 1A, the 1B. But, man, the payroll is high for the baseball team. Shapiro has clearly been able to convince ownership over and over again about being able to spend big dollars. And when you go down to the Rogers Center again this year, you're going to be stepping into a fully renovated ballpark that they sunk millions and millions of dollars into, that the seats are going to face home, that the atmosphere, you're going to be able to actually congregate in spots. You're going to be able to walk around the concourse as you already have been freely. There's going to be better suites, there's better VIP sections. Like, all of that, you have to give them credit. I know it sounds like shilling, but it's just, that's facts. Like, that is real facts. This guy, as the head of the Blue Jays president, as the head of their business operations, essentially, it's pretty undeniable the job that he's done. Payroll's up, and the fan experience is way better when you go to the baseball game. Like, evaluate the missed playoffs that you want. Those two jobs, A+. All you want as a fan, I think, anyways, is those two things, right? Knowing that your team is trying, that they're not cutting payroll, which they've done a good job of since Shapiro arrived, and that your fan experience when you are going to go spend your hard-earned dollars at the ball game is going to feel rewarded. Like, that you're not in, let's face it, I go to a lot of these games. Before last year, and I'm really excited for the renovations now, like, the concourses were dark and dingy, and there was no place to go and meet anybody. It was a really nice, like, the ballpark was extremely fun to be at last year, despite the team having the stretch run that it had, which was painful. But it was still fun to go to the Rogers Center. So that, I'm separating Shapiro and Atkins here. I just am. But Atkins, the baseball operations fall on you. And maybe you're partially a human shield. Maybe Shapiro is more involved in this, and of course he probably is. But for him, his legacy is going to be determined by the outcome of this Blue Jays season. If they stink, if it's a slog again, if they bet on all of these players and it didn't really work out, if there isn't this massive positive regression, it's going to be on him. If the baseball team fails, he's failed, and I think conclusively he's got to go. My opinion, it is what it is. Vladdy, too. I already mentioned why he's lower than Atkins, so I don't need to get into that. But here's why I think the stakes are the highest for Vladdy. You know what we were saying earlier with Joe about the home run jacket? I agree. I agree with that a lot. Vladdy bringing up the home run jacket when it was a polarizing issue in the clubhouse with very likely a lot of players that were still there. I know this sounds so stupid because it's a little home run jacket, but he's supposed to be a leader. And I think one of the biggest miscalculations by this front office, by the way, was like removing all the fun guys because they went, okay, we got to get Vladdy more serious. We got to get Vladdy to mature. We got to get the baseball team to mature. And then last year that obviously didn't work. It was actually kind of the opposite, where it felt like, okay, these guys are never having fun now. It's way too tough. They put way too much pressure on this. And then guess what? It also didn't materially affect the base running mistakes, the errors, the approach, the lack of maturity that they had at times. And so you go, whoopsie. It actually reminds me a little bit of like Daryl Morey, to be honest. When he talks about his first few years in Houston, he was just obsessed with the idea of the analytics, the numbers, the process. And then by the end of his tenure, he went, yeah, you know what? There's a lot of chemistry stuff that actually matters here. You know, this is more valuable than I originally put down in the ledger. But for Vladdy, it's not just you're the hope for the franchise. It's like if he puts together another, you know, mediocre season, and that's what last year was. I'm sorry. I get it. He, for an average player, 788 OPS is good, and OPS plus a 117 is good. It's like, by his standards, last year was a massive disappointment. How many times did he beat the ball into the ground for a double play in a big spot? How many times did you feel like when Vladdy was coming up to the dish that, oh, here we go? Or versus how many times you're like, oh, please, man, come on, find it. Come on, man, please. Please, Vladdy. We'll do a lot more of that. So I think from his legacy standpoint, his career trajectory standpoint, this is an incredibly important season. Is he a 800-ish OPS guy, like a slightly above 800 OPS guy, or is he a 900 OPS guy? I think that we've all sort of settled into the idea that it's not going to be the 48 home run season from 2021, that may have been an anomaly. But I think that there is still very much a question as to where he's going to fall between that number and the one that we saw last season. And that to me is going to be fascinating. The stakes are high. He's going to drive the team. He's going to drive the optimism. He's going to drive the offense. It obviously, like, his importance has been stated by every single person at this stage, anybody with a pulse that talks about the baseball team. But yeah, it's time now. 25 years old as a professional athlete, who is now going to be entering his sixth season in the big leagues. It's time to put it all together. It's time to start leading this team and be one of the faces of the franchise. And so the stakes are incredibly high for him. 3, Springer. He's turning 35 in season. Granted, it's at the end of the season, but he's 34 years old. I've mentioned it over the last couple of shows. The underlying numbers are not kind to him when it comes to trying to project forward. Yes, he was so dreadful last year at the plate that he should still go up. But what are we going to see him capture? I don't think it'll be a 732 OPS again, but we kind of did see it last season when he was struggling. If you want to talk about like the clubhouse dynamics and the clubhouse components, I don't think that he was overly happy. There was even that buzz that Blair had about, you know, Jay's maybe even willing to try to look at moving off of his contract during the offseason. Like this is a huge season for Springer. It used to just be the health. Now it's the health and the productivity. Now it's, okay, what are you actually going to get on the dollar here? Because if the team struggles and he's struggling and he's just like in that leadoff spot and he's delivering, you know, a 740 OPS, 750 OPS, it's going to be groans that the set the table guy isn't who he was or even close to it anymore. And then you're going to start to look at the money and go, man, imagine if the Jays had done this with the money. And that's the worst kind of place you can be as a fan. And I think, again, if we're talking about legacy cementing stuff, you're getting pretty close to it, even though he has 2 years left on that deal after that one. But you don't want the 2 years left on the deal to be the way that people remember the player. So he's number 3. Number 4, Varsho. Again, this list feels pretty obvious. It's like kind of almost a bad segment because I think anybody would have put together essentially the same list, maybe with like one or two of these guys flipped. But yeah, the trade looks really tough to recover from, right? Again, the nerds are going to try to tell you, oh, the war was closer than I actually think. And the defensive metrics is like, shut up. Please shut up. Anybody with half of a brain knows that they got murdered on that trade last year. They gave up a 23-year-old gold glove catcher with a hit tool who was raking in the postseason and coming up with clutch hits, which nobody on the actual Blue Jays roster was actually doing themselves. So yeah, they got murdered on it. They got in a 26-year-old guy who was a defense-first outfielder who was supposed to hit, you know, 27 to 30 home runs, and he hit 20. And for the majority of the season at home, it was just painful to watch him. Truly, truly painful to watch him at the dish. Great outfielder, great defensively, awesome. That you got to have more. You got to have more if that's the trade you're going to be making. And for Varsho, the thing is, plays great defense. He clearly has an awesome power stroke. If he can mash in the 5 or 6 hole for this team and provide that near 30 home run power, I think people are going to accept the trade and move on, and they're going to love him. The guy runs like a football player. I say it all the time. He is a ball player. He's just an athlete. I think that he's probably likable. People want to like this dude. People want to embrace this dude. So hopefully that year two after the trade, you start to actually see some of the offense come together. Because I think if year two it doesn't, then again, you're looking at this and going, woof. This went from a bad trade that you could still dream on to just a flat-out bad trade. 5, Danny Jansen. I went over this when he first got hurt, but you can basically go through the last 3 years of his career and point to missing 2 months of injuries with soft tissue stuff like his hamstrings, or he gets hit with a baseball on his hands and his wrists and fingers just shatter. They're brittle, I guess. Like he's got to drink more milk. I don't know. He's got to step away from the plate a little bit more, whatever the hell it is. But Danny Jansen basically gets hurt for 2 months every single season. And it sucks because he's important to the team. Ever since he started a couple of years ago, pulling the baseball more, 2021, he's had real moments at the plate for this team. He's mashed at the plate for this team. He's been clutch at the plate for this team. But he can't stay healthy. For God's sakes, he's got to stay healthy. Because he's in a contract year. He's clearly a guy that all of the pitching staff trusts. They all love the guy. They all adore the guy. You speak to any one of these pitchers on and off the record, and what do they have to... They love Danny Jansen. Gamer. Thinker. Ball player. But he's got to stay healthy. For the love of God, Jano, stay healthy. Be the man. Find a way to stay on the field and have yourself a good contract year and force us to have conversations that are like, damn, what the hell do you do with this? Force people to have Danny Jansen contract extension talks because, yeah, the alternative is, hey, it's the way that you feel about Chapman. I guess so, but you can't pay him X and you feel fine walking away. Like, the Jays replaced Matt Chapman with an unquestionably worse baseball player by, like, every metric, and there's no fan crying over it. There's no fan that was like, oh, I just wish we had Chapman back. And I kind of think Jansen is going to get there if he just keeps getting hurt. And if they enter the playoffs again going, ah, damn it, he's on the IL. Anyways, those are the five Blue Jays, I think, that have the highest stakes this season. Strap in, baby, because it all starts today at 4 o'clock on SportsCenter. Let's do a quick break and hit what we missed.
SportsNet 590, The Fan.
So you were in love. You tried your best. You gave it your all. You were vulnerable. And it ended up a disaster. It was a cold winter. You had some flirtations. But it wasn't the same. And now you met somebody new. And it's interesting. They've caught your eye. But you're not quite ready to be in that place that you once were, that true vulnerability where you get the most out of a relationship, where you feel the highest of highs. You're still keeping your space. You're still keeping your distance. You're still keeping a lot of your independence because you just know that, God, it hurt. God, it hurts to be burned. God, it hurt to think that she was on the airplane. God, it hurt when you thought that she was going to stay in the game longer. But she left. God, it hurt when you had the expectations. The thrill, but that always ended just not quite right. Ah, but here we are, opening day. And it's time to just, you know, dip your toe back in the water, okay? Try. Just do your best to try. I'm doing my best to try, okay? I'm trying my best to open up my heart again and let the Toronto Blue Jays inside. Ugh. You know, it's funny, if you've ever used dating apps, there's like, whenever you see a profile that says something like, just don't hurt me or something, you know, like, or don't hurt me again, or just be honest with me. Like, you know, the pain, the trauma has been there for the other person. And I'm immediately like, nope. But that's who we are. We're that person on the dating apps now. We're that person. We're every Blue Jays fan. We're entering this season hoping that, you know, it'll be a match. We got to put ourselves out there, but we definitely have, please don't hurt us. Please, please be careful with us. Because God, it's been a grind getting here with this core now. It was amazing. 2021 was a movie, as the youth say. It was a movie, fam. 2022 ended in calamity. 2023 was a nightmare. I don't care. They're going to go, hey, when I'm hopefully 60 years old, what were the 2023 Blue Jays like? They made the playoffs. They won a lot of games. It must have been fun going. It's like, no, it was one of the worst seasons in any sport for any team that I've ever watched, to be honest with you. And then it culminated with this incredible cherry on top, this torture cherry of he's on the plane, which he was not. It was a Dragon's Den guy. It was a dragon on the plane. God, it was the worst. It was the worst. But now I am pivoting to just being all in on today. Feeling like this is already the place. By the way, this is just a helpful tip. I really do feel this way. The first series of the season always feels like the most important until you actually get into September or late August when there's a big series against a team that the Jays are going to be scrapping and fighting with. It's just because you carry over all that emotion. So hopefully the Jays win their fifth straight season opener so that everybody can just get off on the right foot. So everybody can just feel good about this thing. Anyways, subscribe to the podcast, leave 5 stars, follow me on Twitter and Instagram at JD Bunkus. Share the show if you see it, do all those kind of things, reach out anytime. I always appreciate it, but yeah, you got to follow. So what we missed last night, we're at the Conn Smythe dinner. Armin was there. I was there. I had to show up late because I had to work. But I made it for most of it. I made it for most of the speech. I just got to say this too. It's like, man, you can get a little jaded about what it is to be a Toronto Maple Leafs fan, or, you know, it's also been pretty painful. Again, another Simpsons monkey paw thing. Like, oh, you're going to get generational talent and one of the greatest goal scorers to ever put on the Maple Leaf. You're going to get unbelievable talent, more talent than this team has ever had. But they're going to win one playoff series in 8 years. But man, watching Daryl Sittler speak yesterday at Conn Smythe was powerful. Totally. Like an incredible guy who gets it, who has given a ton to the city. Watching him have highlights of welcoming Terry Fox to the city and the two of them running together, I was getting choked up. Listening to that guy talk about his teammates, the relationships that he still has with Lanny McDonald and Tiger Williams, it's powerful stuff. It was really, really enjoyable stuff. So yeah, congrats to him on his award that he accepted last night. Easter Seals, great organization. If you want to, you know, be charitable today, you can go check out their website and maybe make a donation, help send kids to camp. But damn, I felt the passion last night. I felt the passion watching the Daryl Sittler highlights and the old war stories from old Leafs teams. And I went, man, this stuff matters. Okay. This stuff still matters. That is, the passion is real. Okay. The passion is real. And God, I hope that they can just ignite this city this year, this season, because it's, I think it's been a little while since they've had that. The stuff that they were rolling in those highlight reels, you're like, oh, I get it. I get what my dad was talking about. Now I get why I got this passed down to me, this curse, is because he got to watch some of that stuff. Okay, I get it. Anyways, let's hit a couple of things, what we missed.
Well, I do want to ask you, a bunch of MLB teams have been tweeting out their new food and drink items.
Okay, yeah, so it's big food time.
Yeah, your first time at the park. Give me the situation. Where are you trying to sit? What are you trying to have to drink and eat? And give me all that.
So where I'm trying to sit is in free seats. Where I'm trying to sit, listen closely, bosses. Every year I've gotten free tickets to home opener. Every year that I've been with this company, I gotta go. All right, I've been to every single one since 2013, and it's been gratis except for I think two, and I'm used to a certain way of living, and this is very important to me. Okay, very important to me that I get to check out the new amenities for the content of the show. So yeah, I'm hoping that even if they cheap out on me, I'll be sitting in the 100s for opening day because I want to sit amongst the people and I want to see what the new sections are all about. So I don't know exactly where I'll sit, probably somewhere around first or third base. And
so of those two, though, which one would you rather?
Like, what, would you rather first be, or third?
Yeah.
Oh, they don't. It's the same.
Same?
Yeah, it's the same. First and thirds. Like, it's different.
You don't
different
like seeing, like, the Jays dugout versus
nah,
seeing the road team?
No. The one and three. Yeah, first and thirds. Anywhere in between those two is totally fine. I'm actually kind of curious even to go a little further back to see what the vantage point now looks like with the seats facing the proper direction. Because actually, once you, like, one of the things about the Rogers Center before when they weren't that way was when you would go past third base, it was a difficult viewing experience in the 100s because you'd have to, like, crane your neck fully to the side. So, no, I'm definitely going to hopefully be sitting in seats where the vantage point is going to be different. Eventually, I'll end up getting there. But food, I don't know. Did they release the new food item?
I haven't seen any food stuff.
What's the food question that you had for me?
No, it's just, like, what drink and food? Like, what's...
Oh, I'm the same every single time. I'm the same every single time at the ballpark. I never, ever. I do not indulge in... the glizzy. Like, I've never been a sausage or hot dog guy, even from when I was a little kid. But there is something about going down to the ballpark and getting a sausage and then a water, bring the water in, finish the water, and then it's Bud Light time. And now it is time for the greatest beer ever made.
Wow.
And it's just the most versatile. It's just the best. It's just the best. And people can cry all they want about it. They can have their stomp their feet and have their opinions. If I'm going to go and sit in a baseball game in the hot, hot sun, I'm going to have 10 of something. It's going to be delicious Bud Lights.
Hopefully we have a new sponsor by Monday.
Listen, Bud Light should already know that I've done everything. I've done everything in my power to try to attract them to me. And it's been minimal love back to me, you know? All the love that I've given to them, I just want to feel it in return, you know? Anyways, yeah, that's it.
Keep the Bud Lights flowing? Like, you don't hate going to the washroom every 30 minutes?
Again, I'm not you. I don't have a little boy bladder who is running out of the studio, like, all the time, constantly. He's beep, 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 I get a beep, beep. I'm a man. I got a real man bladder. I can sit and have a few Bud Lights. I don't break the seal immediately. I'm not a rookie. I will be fine. Also, now I walk the concourse so much that I just do. You can walk into the washroom pretty quickly. Like, if you're not just sitting... I don't think anybody, no matter where you're sitting at the Rogers Center anymore, is just going to sit in the seats the entire time. This is now a thing where... you're going to walk around. You're going to check out some different vantage points, as you always do. You end up going to the different social sections. And so, yeah, grabbing a quick washroom break is not the world's biggest deal, I guess, for you. It's like, oh, we're going to pee. Yeah, I forgot. No, was it you that I saw?
Bloody Caesars.
Yeah, I forgot
Give
about that.
Give them to me.
What a weirdo you are. What a psychopath that you are. Drink Caesars at the baseball game. Not just one. Not like, ooh, you don't want to have a warm-up Caesar.
Like two max. Weirdest guy.
Weirdest guy.
So refreshing.
Yeah, so refreshing. Weirdest guy. Big time weirdo.
They get the Salt Rim on there, too.
Yeah.
They don't play.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, home opener, though. Monday, April 8th.
Yeah, I'll be there. Can't wait. Daniela, are you going?
D?
Home opener?
Daniela, home opener? That sounds like
by the way, Daniele booked Brandon Belt tomorrow. So subscribe to the podcast, all right? Tomorrow, after the first game, it's going to be a big Blue Jay show. Leafs talk tonight. Sam McKee and I subscribe and review. But tomorrow, Ben Nicholson-Smith and Brandon Belt. Fun show. See you then.